Hey, this is Matt Bush, your friendly neighborhood nerd prom king, and you are listening to Drawn by Success.
Hi, this is Carlos Castellanos, your host at DrawnBySuccess.com, and I'm here with my partner,
Bob Ostrom. How you doing, everybody? Hey, Carlos, we have a very special guest today.
Do we now?
We do. His name is Matt Bush.
That's right.
You might know some of his artwork. You've seen it. If you are into Star Wars at all, you've definitely seen his art. He's got some amazing videos over on the YouTubes. We were checking those out last night. Really good stuff, man. Really amazing artwork.
Yeah, Matt is what I would call an illustration rock star. This guy.
Yeah,
this guy,
that's a good term. I like that.
I put this guy up on a pedestal with Drew Brophy. I mean, this guy has got the lifestyle, the illustration and creative lifestyle that I think we all dream of. You know, the women, the partying, the big house, the Hollywood celebs.
Yeah, and no doubt he's got the art chops to back it up, too.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
So, here we go. Matt, are you on the line, sir?
I am on the line. And, hey, thank you for the incredible introduction. And I don't know what to say about all that rock star stuff. I mean, it's a cool title that, I'd be stupid to not run with that, but... I'm far from a rock star, and it's all for show, for sure.
Well, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about your background? I mean, Bob alluded to the fact that, you know, you're probably best known, and you correct me if I'm wrong, probably best known for your Star Wars illustration, the posters, and the artwork. And I know that you did a series of how to draw Star Wars characters, and you've done a ton of video. Why don't you let people know, bring everybody up to speed on, you know, who you are and what kind of work you're working on?
Well, yeah, I've been working on official Star Wars products since 1994, so I'm probably dating myself here. But so I've worked on posters, books, toy packaging. I've even worked on the new Star Tours ride that just came out. But the big thing that most people know me for is the You Can Draw Star Wars videos, which, of course, is... in promotion with the You Can Draw Star Wars book. And so I just have a great time making these videos that I try to make entertaining and try to teach people some really cool techniques at the same time.
So how did all that get started? I mean, take us back when you were right before your career started, maybe, or right where it took off. I mean, how'd you get all that underway?
Well, you know, when I was younger, I knew I wanted to be an artist, but there was all these different things I wanted to be involved with. And, you know, it was funny, growing up in the 80s, 70s and 80s, I was always told you had to pick one thing and you had to be a master at it. And, like, that was the one thing that you were going to do, which was really hard for me as a kid because, you know, I really liked, obviously, drawing. I really liked writing. I really liked making movies. I liked making music. And I really hated the idea of just picking one thing and you're not allowed to do anything else, you know? One thing that's fun, I kind of thought that was boring. So part of the secret of my success was that I always kept a couple hands in a couple different pots. And sure, illustration has been the big thing that most people know me for, but having the ability to work with video a little bit, being able to write a script for something that you're drawing, being able to create music that you put onto video as you're showing off the art, all of these other different talents or things that you invest in are, you know, they kind of come full circle and it all helps carry the cart forward.
Excellent. So how did you, so what came first? I mean, did you start working commercially? Did you start working in the movie industry like almost immediately? How did that whole movie industry thing come about?
Yeah, I was pretty lucky. I after going to junior college here in the Michigan area, I moved out to Los Angeles, and I went to the Art Center College of Design. Started studying primarily illustration, but also entertainment design.
I went there too.
You did, really?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I feel left out. I didn't go there. Well,
you know what? In 1981, I packed my... Not to interrupt your story.
No.
I'm hijacking his interview.
Sorry, we want to hear about you too, Kermit.
I'm just excited that I meet someone that went to Art Center. But anyway, like 1981, I packed up my car. I had like $5,000 or $6,000 saved up in my bank account. I had a little Nissan B210. Actually, it was a Datsun B210 back then. And just kind of packed my car. And for the first time in my life, I left home. I went straight to the West Coast and didn't even know if I was going to get into Art Center at that point. Because the school was starting like in a couple of weeks. So I just figured, you know, if I don't get in, you know, how bad can it be? I end up in California anyway, so.
Right.
But I ended up getting in, but my grades were really shitty from high school, so so they didn't allow me to go in full time, but I was able to go in nighttime, and I was going nighttime. I was taking a couple of classes during night courses for about a year until I ran out of money completely, and then I came back to Florida and started freelancing. But yeah, I love that school. Awesome school.
Rock on. Rock on. Yeah, my story was very similar. I actually didn't even have a car, but... what I did have, I had a bicycle, and it was funny because if you know anything about bikes, they make them as light as possible. Well, while riding my bike, I couldn't carry my portfolio and my tackle box full of art supplies and whatnot, so my dad helped me take this old drum set that I have, and if you know anything about drums, they make them as heavy as possible, so when you hit a cymbal, it doesn't topple over, you know? Well, we used pieces from my drum set. We attached them to my bike so I could kind of set in my portfolio on the side of my bike, and I could carry the tackle box, you know, behind the seat in the back. But suddenly my light mountain bike was like the heaviest bike in the world. And as you know, Art Center is like up on top of a mountain.
Yeah.
So riding my bike up to school day. Well, basically, I had to push my bike to school, but riding home was a little bit easier.
All downhill.
Right.
And by the end of the semester, you were in phenomenal shape.
I was. Oh, man, was I in great shape, for sure.
Yeah, I'm telling you, for people who aren't familiar with Art Center, Art Center is in Pasadena, man. You had to climb some hills up to get up there. So my hat's off to you just for attempting to ride the bike up that thing.
Yep. Well.
That's crazy.
Where there's a will, there's a way, right?
It was well worth it.
Yep. But anyway, I guess to keep going with that, I went to Art Center, and you know, during the time I was a student in Art Center, you know, I had this almost paranoia that, you know, I was never going to get hired after, you know, graduating, and that I would just have this degree, and that no one would come knocking on my door. So immediately, while going to school, I tried getting work, working on movies, doing storyboarding, working in comic books, and really trying to hit all of these avenues, just basically saying yes to every single job that came my way. And it helped pay a little bit of my schooling at the time and kept me busy. And by the time that I graduated from Art Center, I was already working full time as a freelance illustrator. So that was kind of how I did it, you know, just full force and
Now, what kind of clients did you start out with? Were you doing mostly editorial, advertising?
You know what? It was a little bit of everything. I started off probably doing publishing for really small companies where I would illustrate their book cover and get paid like $62, you know, for a full color book cover. But it was something on my resume where, wow, I can say that I've illustrated a book cover.
Right.
But I also worked, I started working storyboarding in Hollywood. And at first, you know, the movies weren't calling as much because I wasn't as established. So I had to do storyboarding for like Kibbles and Bits commercials and that kind of thing. And then eventually that grew to doing pre-production art for movies like The Matrix and Con Air and, you know, different movies like that. But also I started doing illustration for the Star Wars universe almost right away. I think I was like 22 years old, and I started small. I started illustrating for the Star Wars role-playing games, which, you know, didn't pay as much as a lot of the other Star Wars licensees, you know, for book covers or packaging for toys or anything like that. But it was a way to get my foot in the door, a way to, you know, kind of get noticed by Lucasfilm. And things just kind of spiderwebbed from there.
Now, let me ask you something, because, you know, Art Center is well known for having people, you know, that are well established in the industry as instructors. And being in California, and so close to LA and Hollywood. I know there was, at the time, there used to be quite a few instructors that worked for the movie industry, and, you know, the guys that taught the storyboarding and all that kind of stuff. How, you know, I get a lot of questions usually from people who are either starting out and looking at these expensive schools, you know, whether they're worth it or not. I mean, were the connections that you made via, you know, some of the instructors or some of the students within the school, was that helpful for you in any way? I mean, did you get, were you able to get some, you know, interviews or portfolio reviews or something that you might not have had?
Surprisingly, no, actually. Being in LA was probably what helped a lot of that. But at the time that I went to Art Center, in the mid-90s, the illustration program was going through just kind of a weird, I don't even know what you'd call it, a strange chapter, where they were really going into more like shock art or fine art, which is strange because they already had a fine art program. The reason I went to Art Center is because all of my favorite artists, you know, Drew Struzan, John Alvin, Ralph McQuarrie, Sid Mead, all of these guys, these classic artists that were heroes of mine, they all went there. And, you know, even though I went to visit and saw what the illustration department was doing, I didn't really understand, you know, it was all very abstract and everything else. But I thought, you know, how bad can it be? There's got to be some hidden secrets here. And there were, you know, a couple teachers that definitely were extremely helpful. But for the most part, I was really kind of given this editorial shock art kind of thing, where I tried to get a scholarship every semester that I was there, never got one. And it was really discouraging to see other students getting scholarships for, you know, taking a paper plate, putting poo on it and shellacking it and turning it in, and they would get scholarships. And it would just drive me nuts because I wanted to draw and paint and learn how to make money doing this. And here they were just, it was just very discouraging. And but I think it was just kind of a short chapter that Art Center was going through with their illustration department. Happened to be the time that I was going there. So where I got a lot more help, there was another school that was called the Los Angeles Art Academy, and now they're called, I believe, the Los Angeles School of Figurative Art. And that school was a non-credited college that I was also taking classes at, and that had a lot more teachers that were directly working for Disney, working for Lucasfilm, working for Hanna-Barbera, and they had a lot more just really good schooling on how to draw and paint in general, but also they were, you know, working illustrators where you could ask them questions. You know, if I was working on a book cover, how much do I charge for this? They would have real answers. Where I'd go to Art Center and all my teachers, you know, it's great, they had master's degree in fine art and like the history of art, but, you know, if I ask them, you know, how much do I charge for a book cover, they'd pause for a minute and they'd say, well, in 1486, when Michelangelo was commissioned for the Sistine Chapel, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, great. Now I know how much to charge for a book cover today. But so actually, I had, you know, some great experiences from Art Center, even if a lot of them were what not to do. But so I don't mean to dog, you know, the school that I got my degree from. But at the time that I went there, it just wasn't as helpful. And so to answer your question, I would probably, you know, for someone today that's looking to go to school to learn and to try to break into this industry, definitely take a look at what the teachers are doing, what the student work is, what they're really pushing at that school, and that'll be a good indication of what you're going to learn and where you're going to go.
Are you still in touch with maybe other people, other guys or artists that came up through the ranks with you while you were in school, and have they kind of reached any level of notoriety where you guys have been able to work together or anything?
Haven't worked with anyone that I graduated from. There's a few students that were really, really good that are doing well. But again, they're working, even though they went through the illustration department, they're working doing fine art, doing gallery work, where they're doing incredible, beautiful paintings, selling them in galleries. Where I'm, you know, probably the only one that I can think of offhand that I graduated with that's doing a lot more commercial work, work for hire kind of stuff. And that's not to knock, but by any means, you know, fine art or anything like that. There's definitely a place for it, and I love it. But it was just, you know, discouraging to be in the illustration department and kind of being force-fed the fine art stuff when I wanted to learn how to make money right away, you know, right. service that I was never going to get a paycheck, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about your marketing and what you're doing right now and how you're, you know, you're getting your stuff out there? I mean, some of the things that we've seen on YouTube and stuff are really, they're fun and, you know, pretty fresh and that kind of thing. But what other kind of things do you do to get yourself out there?
Well, another thing that I was really into when I was in high school and maybe the first part of college, junior college, I was in a rock band. And so when I kind of gave up music, I still do it as a hobby, but, you know, kind of turned more towards being an artist, I really applied some of those marketing things that bands always do and kind of just brought that along with being an artist. Obviously, you have to sell yourself, you have to get your name out there. And, you know, most artists that are trying to break into the business, they're not using that mentality that a lot of bands do. You know, bands do things like they make flyers, they hang them up, you know, wherever they go to, you know, downtown where the clubs are, and, you know, all their flyers are all over, you know, the telephone poles and bulletin boards and stuff. They're always, I don't know if you could say spamming people on Facebook and MySpace and all that stuff, but, you know, they're getting their name out there and, you know, just using techniques like that. You go to their show, they're selling t-shirts, they're selling hats, they're making money not only on their music, but on merchandise and that sort of thing. So that was kind of an aspect that I kind of brought to trying to sell myself. You know, again, not trying to be a rock star necessarily, but, you know, early on in my career, doing things like making baseball hats that said, you know, Fantastic Visions, The Art of Matt Bush on the front of the hat, and people would buy them on the website. You know, it was extra money for one thing, but also people are walking around with baseball hats that have my name on it. You know, how great is that?
How cool is that? Yeah, so, that's all right.
So I've always been kind of an artist. You know, I try not to overdo it, and I, you know, I don't want it to be too hokey, but, you know, I look at things like doing bumper stickers and t-shirts and everything else to you know, try to get my name out there and everything else. And I kind of had this idea, the whole rock star of illustration thing, I had this idea that I really wanted to do when I was in college. I wanted to start this new thing where there were art stars, because, you know, if someone makes it as a rock and roll band, you've got rock stars, and obviously you've got movie stars. If someone makes it big in sports, they're an all-star, and obviously you have porn stars. But there's no art stars, really. You know, a lot of people, if you ask them to name a famous artist who's alive today, if they're not into the scene of art, a lot of people can't even name an artist today that's alive, that's well known and doing it, you know?
Yeah, so other than us three.
What's that? Other than the three of us, right?
Right,
of course.
Right,
yeah. So it's kind of been a mission. I've always wanted to do this thing where I wanted to be an art star. And then as soon as I kind of got the tagline, the rock star of illustration, it's not exactly what I was looking for, but hey, that's cool. I'll take it.
No, you know? I think it works. You know what? I think your correlation between the when you were in a band and the art, do you think a lot of that has to do, because most artists are, I mean, if you're in a band, I mean, you have to be pretty, you have to be pretty much of an extrovert, you know, not be embarrassed and put yourself out there and be on stage and what have you. But as an artist, I mean, you know, if you're working solid, you know, as a solitary artist most of the time, I mean, most artists are introverts.
Right.
And maybe that has a lot to do with not being comfortable putting yourself out there and marketing yourself. And so I think that may have helped you quite a bit, because you look like, you know, you're not afraid to put yourself out there.
It's definitely a difficult line to walk, because on one hand, you don't want to kiss your own ass or have it, you know, come across that way. But definitely, if you don't sell yourself, if you don't believe in yourself or put yourself up on that pedestal, no one else will, you know? So it's definitely, sorry about that. It's definitely something that an artist has to do. You have to be the, you know, the business person. And again, you're absolutely right. It's difficult. Most artists are introverted and they've got to come out of that shell and they've got to get their name out there and be vocal about it.
Yeah, you know, the way you've gone about it, I think it's very congruent with, you know, with what I've seen of you. I mean, it comes across very natural. I mean, you're out there just having a good time, basically. I mean, it's not like you're trying to say, oh, I'm Matt Bush, the, you know, rock star artist, you know, come kiss my butt and, you know, kneel before me. I mean, your stuff is out there just basically, you know, you're out there having a good time. You're out there really enjoying the work that you're doing and also, you know, engaging with your audience, you know, with the people who love your work. I mean, so I think there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And I really love the way that you're doing it because even though, you know, I call you the rock star illustrator, it's not in a bad way because, I mean, it's, you know, to a certain degree, it's up to you to give yourself that platform because no one's going to do it for you. You know, and I think that's something that a lot of artists in general need to learn is that, you know, they sit back and wait for someone to appoint them, you know, worthy of such a title or, you know, being at a certain level when it's really, you know, really up to you. I mean, if you've got the chops, which you certainly, you know, you've got the art chops to be able to pull it off, you know, it's up to you to give yourself that position.
Oh, well, thanks. I think another thing that helps too, if you've seen any of my videos, you obviously know I have no problem poking fun at myself, you know, whether it's being, you know, knocked into a pool of water or getting ink all over my face or, you know, whatever for the videos. If I can get, you know, one or two people to laugh, I feel like, you know, mission accomplished.
No, they're definitely fun videos to watch. I would highly recommend anybody listening to this to go visit. You have them on mattbush.com, right?
Yeah, they're everywhere. Mattbush.com. I've got a YouTube channel. You can add my I've got a Facebook page and everywhere else. If you look, you will find them.
Well, we'll put those in the show notes so people can come find you.
Oh, awesome! Thank you.
You know, one of the interesting things too that I noticed about your videos that a lot of them date back to like 2007. I mean, we're not talking like, you know, decades ago, but it was still relatively new for a lot of people. And, you know, the last couple of years I've been telling artists to, you know, not just put their work out there in print form, you know, illustrated, not just put their work out there in print form, but actually on video and stuff, because, you know, take advantage of all the multimedia you have available to you. And looking back on those videos, I mean, back in 2007, you were creating videos, video portfolios of your site, of your work.
Yeah. You know, and it actually dates back further than that. Probably around 2007 is when I really kicked it into high gear. But as far back as probably 2000, I was putting together kind of like digital slideshows of my work. But, you know, it's interesting because I, and this is something that I kind of investigate with my own students that I have, is, you know, illustration, where it was, where it is today, and where it is in the future. You know, obviously when we were growing up going to school, illustration was really treated as like a static thing. It was either a billboard or it was a book cover or it was a movie poster. And obviously all those things exist today, but so much of what people see and take in is online and things are presented with motion. And it's not like I think every illustrator should get into animation necessarily, but really try to think of their work, kind of take it to the next level of how it can either move or be presented with some kind of motion or, you know, every illustration that you do, can you do it in layers where maybe when someone looks at it, it's presented in a way where the background is slightly moving and it gives like a kind of a false sense of 3D or something like that. And I think it's really looking at the future. I think what most people consider an illustrator is going to be a lot different from what people thought of an illustrator in the past.
Yeah, I think the lines are definitely blurring between the static illustration and the multimedia that, you know, that we have available.
Yep. So as we talk about the future, what are some things that you're thinking about? Where do you see yourself, you know, in the next several years?
Oh man, boy, am I on the spot.
sorry about that. We can skip.
I'm usually looking only like 6 months ahead because I've got so many things like on my plate right now that. But I think, you know, the future, I think it's just going to continue. I think things are changing so quick that, man, it's hard to see where things are going, because the things today already, if you told me 5 years ago how things were going to be today, I would have laughed and said, no way. And boom, here we are and here it is, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I'm looking at stuff like e-publishing and all that kind of thing, and how that's going to affect the illustration industry. I see just some huge changes are coming.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think one thing, too, there's a new app that came out recently that I co-developed with Digital Wave Creative. It's called Interactive Sketchbook, and currently it's exclusively for the iPad. But I'm just blown away with, you know, these tablets like the iPad. I really think that, and this, I'm sure illustration will be hugely affected by this, but I think a lot of people say that books aren't going to go away, and there's no way that everyone's just going to read all their books online or on, you know, some kind of Kindle or iPad or something like that. But you know what? I'm sure they said that about scrolls, too. And, oh, come on. People love just turning the, you know, the paper and holding one
rolling it out like a roll of toilet paper.
Books are totally going to take over where you turn the page. People love scrolls. So I don't know. It's, you know, it's interesting what will happen in the future with books and newspapers. I don't know. Who's to say? You know, it's hard. Here in Detroit, we're the first major city in the U.S. where... I believe the Detroit News and the Detroit Free Press, which is kind of combined forces, they only deliver the newspaper 3 days a week. And the rest of the week, you've got to go online. And if you subscribe to the Detroit News, you get like a special membership, or a membership where you have access to other content you normally wouldn't otherwise. But it's... you know, it's strange. In a world where anyone can go get news right now at the snap of a finger and get the latest of what's going on, it's hard. It, you know, and I miss newspapers, and you know, just like anybody. But it's scary. You know.
Yeah, I've experienced that too with the syndicated comic strip. I mean, you know, when we came out, you know, you figure, you know, you're growing up and you're thinking, okay, if I get a syndicated comic strip, that'll be sweet. You know, you think of people like Charles Schulz or something. You know. And, mm-hmm. You figure you'll have your whole career set, and it turns out that when we got syndicated, the newspaper industry was already starting to go in the toilet. So it's like preparing for the major leagues all your life, and then you finally make it, and they start shutting down all the stadiums, you know. So but we've been fortunate in that, you know, Mall is still picking up clients where a lot of other comic strips have been their readerships have been slashed by half. But you know, talking about, you know, the changes, those kinds of changes, how are you preparing for it? I mean, how do you see yourself evolving, and where do you see the opportunities in, you know, in your industry?
Well, you know what, I think the secret of my success in the beginning, I think I'm gonna just kind of continue with that, and that is just keeping my hand in a bunch of different pots, and whatever's hot and whatever seems to be calling or where the money is coming in, that's kind of where I'm going to stay with it. And I think that, you know, the recent example, again, I'm working on a couple different apps for the iPad, either designing games or newer versions of Interactive Sketchbook, and just staying on top of what's hot right now, so that, you know, when the next big thing hits, hopefully I'll be riding on top of the wave, and just staying with it. But I think in general, what I've noticed in my career where things have kind of fluctuated, 10 years ago, I would go to like a comic book convention, like the San Diego Comic-Con or a Star Wars convention, and I would sell original artwork. And I would make a ton of money, and I didn't have as many fans back then. I didn't have a steady flow of people that were coming up to the table, but I would have, you know, every couple hours someone would buy another painting, and I would walk away from the show having made some really, really good money selling original art. Those days are kind of gone because it's rare that someone buys original artwork, and when they do, it's not for as much money as it used to be. The difference now is that I've kind of built my career. There's a lot more people lining up to get my autograph. I'm selling a lot more prints and posters and things like that that don't cost as much money. And it's funny because there's so many more people. There's a lot more exchanging of dollars. So I always feel like during the show, oh man, this is going to be crazy. I'm going to make so much money. And at the end of the show, I count it. And it's about the same as what I was making before, but it's just a lot more small sales as opposed to a small number of large sales. So that's kind of been the trade-off, is, you know, people don't have as much money to spend. But also, you know, there's situations where people, even posters and prints, I've noticed kind of a decline in that, and a lot of fans just don't have room for all of the posters in their house, or, you know, they may have a significant other that says, no Darth Vader in the living room or something, you know. So things like trading cards and sketch cards are really cool collectibles that are smaller. They're a little bit more affordable. So, so again, just keeping my hand in all these different pots and taking the money wherever it comes in, I guess.
So you also do some work in film. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I, you know, again, when I started in the industry, I worked a lot in two aspects of movie making. One, pre-production, which is storyboarding, concept design, where I get to design the look of characters or the look of the backgrounds or the set, you know, designing props and that sort of thing, or storyboarding, where I'm kind of trying to help dictate how the blocking or the action is presented to the audience. And the other aspect of movie art that I immersed myself into early on was the advertising, where I'm working with marketing and advertising to design the movie posters, that, you know, anything from the website all the way through billboards and that sort of thing. And sometimes there's different marketing that they'll do for movies where there's a viral marketing or comics that are on the website. So those are the two areas that I kind of focused on. In more recent years, I've had a lot more fun kind of working on my own projects. So in 2003, I wrote, directed, starred in, did the music for everything for my first feature-length feature, which was straight to DVD. It was a movie called Conjure, which was kind of a supernatural thriller. And, you know, it didn't make it, what, you know, it wasn't in theaters. It didn't make a ton of money. But because I did it all myself, I had a lot of fun doing it. I was able to do it the way I wanted to do it, as opposed to just being one of many kind of working for the man and churning out, you know, this giant product where I'm just one ant kind of working on it. I got to do something that was all my own that I got to be proud of. And because I did it all myself, I got to reap the benefits of it. And it wasn't as much money coming in, but when you're taking in 100% of the profits, that's pretty sweet. And so I've kind of been immersing myself a little bit more in doing projects like that, where I'm in more control, I get to creatively be involved, and for better or worse, I get to be responsible for the product. Some people like them, some people don't, but I'm doing it all myself and enjoying it.
Now, have you funded these projects out of your own pocket, or?
Yes. Conjure, I funded it completely out of my own pocket. Then I had a feature-length documentary called Illustration Nation, which also was out of my own pocket. And then gearing up probably at the end of this year to start writing and working on my next feature film, which I'm hoping to do bigger and better than ever, and kind of take a lot of what I've learned, not only with those other two features, but with all these You Can Draw Star Wars episodes, which have been just a variety of different techniques that I've done. They've just really been an incredible film school for me. So I'm hoping that the next one that I do is I turn it up to 11. you know.
Because there's one better than 10.
Now, you know, talking about funding your own project and stuff, actually, you know, Bob and I were just kicking around the subject of Kickstarter.com not too long ago. We were planning on doing an interview or a show about it. Are you familiar with Kickstarter.com?
No, I'm not.
With the crowdfunding, where people post projects, like movie projects, book projects, app projects, I mean, you know, whatever, almost anything under the sun. You post a project up there and you get it funded by people who dig what you're doing. And then at different funding levels, you know, you're offering, like if you're doing the movie, they get at a certain level, maybe they get credits in the movie. If, you know, at a certain other level, then maybe they get executive director credit or something, plus the DVDs right. or T-shirts or swag or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So you bring people in, you know, anywhere between $10, $15 to up to $1,000 where people can fund your project.
Wow.
So I don't know, just throwing that out there. I didn't know if you were familiar with that.
Yeah, I would love to check that out. I haven't done anything like that yet, but I do know some artists, one in particular who recently he wanted to do a full color sketchbook and really get some nice printing and do it hardcover and have it ready for the big San Diego Comic-Con, but just couldn't afford to do the printing up front. So he did a similar thing where he said, hey, I'm taking donations, and for every $10 donation, you'll get a free print, like an 11 by 17 kind of thing. For every $25 print, you'll get a little head sketch on it and everything else, and then up to, you know, whatever price that people give in, you get a signed copy of the book, and I'll do a little doodle illustration inside and all these different things. And this artist went well beyond what he needed for printing because of everyone donating. And then on top of that, he's going to have all the books for free. Then he's going to sell the books and make money, which is great. And, I wasn't really sure at first how that was going to pan out, but it looked like it went really well for him. So that's a really great way to kind of drum up not only some cash up front, but interest, and to get people excited about your project.
Absolutely. Yeah, check it out, Kickstarter.com. And they have a lot of interesting projects in there. Everything from art, music, movies, you name it. I mean, that's in there. Products. A lot of interesting things going on there, and a lot of people getting funded. So, you know, you're basically pre-selling what you want to sell.
Yeah.
Up front, so... and like you said, it gets you started, it gets the product out there, and then you're able to sell it, you know, beyond that. So, interesting.
Awesome. I've got it written down. I'll be checking it out.
Yeah, definitely check it out. So anything else, Bob? What do you got? What do you got? What do you got for Mr.
Throw it at you, man.
You want to hit him with, I want to hit him with the heavy stuff.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, I'm ready.
I've had you on my list here to call you for like the longest time. I think we talked about that before. But I had to ask you this one question.
Sure.
What's the deal with Sarah Wilkinson? You guys an item or what? Because, I mean, she shows up in all of your artwork.
No. You know what? She and I, we dated actually years ago. And so some of those first videos were when she was my girlfriend. And so there was a time period. And the reason why she showed up in a lot of stuff is there was a number of years where I was doing more pinup art. And again, that kind of going where the money is. And at the time, I think Star Wars stuff was a little slow, and so I was doing all the, you know, the good girl art and everything else. And you know, she was great to work with, and she was always, you know, into the modeling and doing everything else. So she was like a free model that I had at my disposal for everything. So she modeled for me everything from I think Poison T-shirts that I did for the band, and just all kinds of stuff. And we dated for 3 years, and during that time did a lot of Sarah Wilkinson art, but but we're still good friends, and she's an artist herself, actually. So she's fantastic, and I wish her the best.
Excellent. We were watching the video last night, the one where you had her in the gray t-shirt and okay. like it starts out really normal. I'm like, wow, this guy's doing all right. And then all of a sudden, like the next thing I know, you got a pink wig on and you're dancing around. we had a good time watching that one.
That was actually the video where I first discovered you and, you know, found out about you. Uh-huh. And then I started looking up, you know, on everything that you were doing. But that was the first time I was exposed to your work. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, that was an interesting video.
Yeah.
So do you have a slave Princess Leia limited edition art print? I think that's on your site. Is that new or?
Yeah, it's relatively new. It's been out for a year or two now. And there's only a few of them left, which you can get at mattbushstore.com. But that was done kind of in collaboration with Carrie Fisher herself. And she has a charity that she's really into. It's called the Pajama Program. And what it does, it gets nice, fresh, new jammies for kids in need that don't otherwise have them, which I think is really cool.
Oh, what a great cause.
So there was one video I wanted to ask you about.
Yes.
You had done a Barack Obama cover.
Yes.
And I was watching that one, and I really liked the way that you sort of walked through the steps and that kind of stuff. Can you talk a little bit about how you got that project?
Yeah. What was he? At Razor Digital Entertainment, the executive vice president at the time that Conjure was distributed by Razor Digital, a guy named Mitch Perlis, he went on to work for another company that was producing the Barack Obama DVD, and they were kind of throwing around different ideas that they wanted to do for the cover of it, and someone mentioned that they wanted to have it illustrated, and Mitch Perlis said, oh, I've got the guy, Matt Bush would be great. And so he called me up, and to me, just, man, what an honor to illustrate the President of the United States. It's kind of very different. I'm an artist, so of course I'm political, but I don't, I'm not really into throwing my political views in anyone's face or anything like that, but really enjoyed working on the on the project. And then I got to do, as you saw, that video was one of the bonus features on the DVD. So that was a lot of fun too, to be able to do that.
Yeah, it was a cool video. And I would encourage people to go take a look at it, because when you look at the process of how you do your work, it's really fascinating. Each time I thought, like, wow, he's done now. And it was like, no. And then I do this. And I was like, whoa. And then it would, you know, get even better. And then, you know, next thing you know, out come the pencils. And you're like, okay, he's got to be done now. Nope, now it's going into Photoshop. So it's really fascinating to see your work process.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah. And the other cool thing about that Barack Obama video is it shows some of the different sketches that I did and what was approved, what wasn't approved, which one did they go with. And, as any professional artist or illustrator knows, there's always changes, and you have to try to work in a way where you're prepared to make those changes. And, you know, we always have the idea of the way we want it to be, and you've got to have thick skin and just be ready when they want something different. You know, the client is always right, even if you're thinking inside, what were they thinking? It would have been so much better this way. But you know what? They're the one writing the paycheck, and you got to get over it. And, go with what they want, you know.
Oh, sure, no doubt. Artists are interested in that process, that thought process of developing something out, and I think that video shows a really good process. But we'll put the link to that up too. So,
thank you.
Yeah, that's a good one to check out. So, are you surprised sometimes by the art that they pick? I know that a lot of times when I submit artwork, I think like, oh, that's going to be the one right there, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, it was that one over there, that little doodle that you had down the corner we like best. So I'm just wondering, like, how often are you surprised by that kind of thing?
It's always a shocker, but the big thing that I hear among artists, which I would have to admit is probably true, you know, you'll do a sketch, and you kind of know based on what your client said, they kind of want this, they want this, they want that. They give you all the parameters. So you do a sketch that's kind of your best interpretation of what they need for the job. And then, of course, they don't like it. So you do all these other sketches, and you know every time they tell you something else, yeah, but that's not going to be what you said before, but okay, I'll do it, you know, do what you want. And then it's always, as soon as time starts running out, they always go back to that first, you know, that first one that you did. That's what I thought. That's what I thought you wanted. And we'll just go with that one. That seems to happen quite a bit. But again, it's all part of the job. You know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Deadlines can be your friend, too.
Absolutely.
It's got to end sometime.
Yep. You know, one thing that I've done a little bit in my career, and I hope art directors aren't listening to me say this right now, but I have found that a lot of times if you're working on a project and you've got like a pretty healthy deadline that, you know, they don't need something for a month, you happen to finish it in 2 days, don't send it to them right away, or they're going to have all these changes. They have all the time in the world to noodle it and everything else. And don't, it doesn't mean turn it in last minute, but, you know, give them some breathing room. But, if you turn in something early, that just instantly means they're gonna throw all these changes because they can, you know, kind of thing.
It's definitely speaking from experience. Yeah, I've had that happen a time or two.
And also gives them the impression you're not all that busy.
Yes.
Which gives them full reins to go ahead and request all those changes.
Or that you can do things super quick, and you may have worked 48 hours straight just to get it done, but they're like, wow, he did this in 2 days. This must have just taken him a couple hours. Great, we'll have him do a bunch more stuff, you know, and a bunch of changes, because he can do it so quick.
We've all been there, I think.
Yep.
So what would you recommend or suggest to let's say, like, people starting out? I mean, because the industry is changing a lot. What would you recommend to people that are looking to get into the creative arts today?
Well, the biggest thing that I say is stick with it. I'm a firm believer that there's enough work for everybody, and that everyone can do it if they put their mind to it, and if they practice, and if they get their work out there. There's easily enough work for everybody. A lot of artists, I think, who are, A lot of artists are a little bit more territorial. And they feel like if they help other aspiring artists break into the business, that they're going to be fighting for the same jobs and that sort of thing. And I think that's kind of silly. But I think there's enough work for everybody. And I think even though the economy isn't so hot right now, I think with the technology that we have in our fingertips, there's never been a better time to break into the industry because of just everything from the web to social networking sites to great websites like Drawn by Success.
Gotta check that site out.
Check that one out, Carlos.
Well, what was it again? Drawn by what?
But, you know, I'm sure you guys know when we wanted to break in, we went to the library, and how many great books for breaking into the industry were there then, you know?
A mystery back then. Yeah, definitely.
It's definitely a great time to break in, just having all these resources at your fingertips. One thing I haven't mentioned yet that I have some kind of pro and con insight to is agents. Do you guys ever get into working with agents and that sort of thing?
No, sure. Bob has worked with agents. I've never worked with an agent before. Share with us.
Well, right now I don't work with agents, and I'm not as much a fan of it, but I do have other artist friends that swear by it. They get great work, and my story with agents is when I lived in Los Angeles, I had as many as 3 different agents at a time, and at one time I had an agent for entertainment illustration, I had one agent for advertising, and then I had one agent for publishing. And slowly but surely, I found that even though I don't like the business side of it as much, I don't like haggling over prices and everything else, I do like to know where my money's coming in, and I like to be in charge of getting the projects that I want to work on and not being told, hey, I got this great gig for you. Oh, yeah, I'm not as excited about that one, but okay, yeah, I'll do it, you know, kind of thing. And probably the greatest example or the greatest story that I share with some of my students is I had an agent for publishing, but at the time I had already, I was already working on a lot of Star Wars books, so she wasn't able to really get me anything that I didn't already have. So one day she called me and she said, okay, and this was, I believe, 2001 or 2000 or something like that. And she called me and she said, listen, tell me what you want, and I am going to work my butt off to get it for you. And I already had all the Star Wars stuff, so I thought about it for a minute. I said, you know what? Me and my dad, we used to read all of the Lord of the Rings books when I was a kid. And, man, I would love to, because there was a new movie coming out the next year. It was also the same year that the new Harry Potter movie was coming out. But I hadn't read any of the Harry Potter books, didn't know anything about Mr. Potter. So anyway, so I said, listen, if you can get me anything Lord of the Rings for publishing, I would love to draw anything that's kind of based on that movie. She said, you got it. So about a month later, she calls me back. She says, are you sitting down? I have an incredible gig for you. You are going to love this. I said, all right, I'm sitting down. What is it? She said, you are the new artist and writer of the book, How to Draw Harry Potter. And I said, oh, Harry Potter. And I said, okay. She said, well, you don't sound very excited. I said, well, Harry Potter, I don't know anything about Harry Potter. She goes, what? I thought you wanted to work on Harry Potter and you read all the books and stuff. And I said, no. I said, I did say Lord of the Rings. And she said, that's not the same thing?
Oh, nice.
No, not really. So anyway, so we had a falling out because, you know, God bless her. She worked her butt off to get me this gig, which someone out there ended up taking it and I'm sure loved it. But she worked really hard to, you know, to get me this thing, but I wouldn't have been happy working on it. So long story short, I find that no one knows what you want better than yourself, and no one's going to work harder on your career more than yourself. So for me, I'm not as much a fan of working with agents, but in terms of breaking into the industry and getting consistent work, they can certainly be a help. And I've got some artist friends that are making top dollar, and they've got great agents. So I guess that's the light and dark of it.
Well, thanks for sharing that. You know, at the risk of going long on this interview.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to touch on the marketing part. Just really, just like I promised Bob, I'm not going to go deep with this.
You promised Bob what?
That I'm not going to go real deep with this, because I can really spend like all day talking about this stuff.
Okay. Yeah, see, I'm the guy who has to edit these things, so.
getting back to like, you know, what portion of your time, because I know, you know, a lot of artists struggle with this, the ones that don't have, you know, reps and stuff like that, they struggle with having to do the artwork, having to market themselves, having to price their work out, having to position themselves within their given markets. How do you split your time? Because obviously you're doing this yourself, so I mean, how do you split your time between wearing the different hats?
You know what? It's something I think about a lot. It's something I talk to a lot of artists about. It's very, I don't have a formula for it or how much time that I do. I can tell you that it is frustrating that I spend more time online promoting, marketing, dealing with clients, doing everything else than I actually spend at my drawing desk. Or being creative. So that's a little, again, that's another reason why, man, I really wish I had an agent to kind of help take some of the workload off. But it's something that I just kind of, at the beginning of my day, I sit down at the computer and whichever emails must get answered, I answer those. And whichever clients I have time to deal with, I work on those. And then I kind of gauge the rest of my day what I can do creatively, what there's time for, what I'm having fun with, what I'm burned out on, and if I feel like doing something else. And I kind of just take each day as it comes and tackle it that way. But I wish I have other artist friends, not just artists in the sense of like illustrators, but friends that work in sound effects and music and in movie making, and I talk to them about how they budget their days, and a lot of them are able to do just 9-to-5 days where they wake up in the morning and they do this, and then they take an hour break for lunch, and at 5 o'clock, whatever they're working on, they punch out, and it sounds fascinating. I wish I could do that, you know, but I'm pretty much, if nothing else is going on, you can find me at 4 in the morning, you know, a lot of times if I can't sleep, I'll be up working on something creative or answering email, doing whatever. And I just kind of take it as it comes, you know?
Yeah, I guess my point is that, you know, with a lot of the more successful artists that we've interviewed, you know, there's kind of this underlying theme where, you know, they make time for the business side of their business, you know. The mm-hmm. ones that struggle are the ones that are producing just being creative all the time, and then even when they're slow, they're being creative and playing with other creative, you know, pursuing other creative facets, but it's more of a they're trying to avoid, you know, the business stuff that they don't like doing, or, you know, contacting clients or marketing themselves, and then they're constantly in the cycle of feast and famine, you know, where they have a lot of work 1 week and then for the next month they've got nothing. You know, so you've got to like really kind of invest in your marketing, in your business side of your business, in order to get past that hump.
Yes, and that's something that that I talk a lot about with a lot of my students, and definitely to be a successful artist, it's 50%, you know, being a good artist and 50% being a business person. And a lot of people don't like hearing that, but that's exactly what it is. And, you know, I have a lot of either students or just people in the industry that I see that are trying to break in. And when things aren't working, it's because they don't have enough of one side or the other. There's phenomenal artists that are amazing, but they're just not working to get their work out there. They're not good business people, and so it's a complete waste. They're so good, but they're just not making it happen. The other side is also kind of funny. That I know a number of artists that are so good at getting the word out there. They're like marketing whores. They're you know, they talk a really good game, and they're really out there trying to make it work. But their art isn't where it should be, and a lot of times, and this is hard to tell someone, and if it's a student, I can say so. If they're not a student of mine, I don't want to just tell an artist that they need to go back to the drawing board and kind of rework some things. But if you're a really good marketer, if the work isn't there, then that's not going to happen either. You know, it really needs to be the blend.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that wraps up my questions, Mr. Bob Wallstrom. Do you have anything else for Mr. Matt Bush?
I don't. Thanks so much for coming on, Matt. I really appreciate you talking to our listeners and letting everybody know about some of the things that you do. We'll put links to Matt's site and some of his videos in the show notes so that people can go check them out. Is there anything that you would like to promote before we call the show?
You know what? I would just say there's a lot of different things I'm involved with, but if you can just give a plug to mattbush.com, it's MATTBUSCH, spelled like the beer, not like the shrub. that would be great, and people can find pretty much anything they want there.
Yeah, because beer's way better than shrubs.
It's cheap beer, but...
Well, that's not the point, though.
And beer versus shrubs, cheap beer still beats shrubs. Well, thanks for coming on, Matt. Again, we appreciate you talking.
Awesome, thank you guys. Let me know what it's up, and I can't wait to plug it and plug what you guys are doing to my circle of peeps. I know a lot of people are going to dig checking out your website and all you guys got going on, for sure.
Well, thanks, I appreciate you being on. And hopefully we'll be able to maybe get together again and maybe go more in depth on the business side. You know what I mean? Because I know there's a certain, not all of them want to listen to that, but there's a certain segment of our listeners that really, you know, understand the importance of that, and we'd like to deliver that for them. So maybe down the line we can set something up for that.
I'd be more than happy to anytime, guys.
Excellent. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it, buddy.